Hello, today is March 29th, 2023. This is Christy Snowden interviewing Barbara. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Christy.
Hi. Can you please tell me your full name, where you were born, your nationality, and your date of birth?
Yes, my name is Barbara Lee. Last name is Gadara. My last name, unmarried, was Jones, so it was Barbara Lee Jones. And my married name is Gadara. I was born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in 1935. And what else?
Nationality.
I am U.S. citizen.
Okay.
And I have residency in Spain.
Okay, great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Can you tell us about how you came to live in Seville?
Well, I guess first I have to tell you how I came to live in Spain, because we went to Mallorca, to Palma, in October, the end of September 1961, and we stayed there for a month. We didn't like it because it just seemed like far away from reality, far away from country. It's an island, and the people spoke Mallorquin, which is dialect of Catalan. And I didn't speak Spanish anyway, but we came to Spain for my husband's purpose. He had just finished his doctoral work in Minnesota, at the University of Minnesota, and he was taking a year off to write. Okay, so we went to Spain because it was less expensive to live than Paris, for example. We had $4,000. And we came to Spain, and we went to Mallorca. We were there for a month, and from there we went to Malaga, to Marbella, and we stayed there for November 1961 to October 1962.
Huh. So, where were you living before you started this, going to Las Palmas?
We lived in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where my husband was going to the University of Minnesota for his doctorate.
Is that where you're both from?
No, we're both from Long Island, New York.
And how did you get in Minneapolis?
Well, we met at work in New York City.
Oh.
And then he got a scholarship, he got a fellowship to the University of Minnesota. So we got married and moved out to Minnesota and stayed there for 2 years while he was a teacher assistant and studying for doing his classwork for the doctorate.
What was his doctorate about?
It was in English literature.
Oh, okay, thanks. So you moved then from Malaga to Seville, is that right?
Yes, in October of 1962. We moved to Seville. We were actually going to Barcelona because there was an American school there, an American study program that he could get a job at. But on the way, we went first to Seville because there was a military base and there was a possibility of his teaching at the military base because we were running out of money. We needed so you look for a job. So we went to Seville. That was to be through Seville to Barcelona, but we never left Seville because he found work there at what they call eventual work there, and then
temporary work.
Got temporary work and got he got some courses at University of Maryland, overseas courses at the U.S. base in Morón. He taught did some substitute teaching at the high school, and did teaching for the military education department of effective writing. GED for Americans who have not finished their high school education. It's general education degree. They study and take a test, and then they get the equivalent of a high school diploma.
Right.
So that's what he did there, and it was for another year, but then we stayed until 1968. And went back to New York State.
Why did you go back?
Well, we were kind of tired of living on $5,000 a year, but we could do that. We could even have, we have a couple of huergas every year at our house.
A couple of what, sorry?
Huerga.
Strikes?
No, it's not huelga, it's huerga. It's a flamenco show.
Oh.
You could, in those days, you could get flamenco singers and players to perform at in your garden. And all you had to do was give them a little bit of manzanilla or fino and a few pesetas, and they would come and perform. It's like, you know, your garden party at night.
Oh.
Yeah, there was a lot of that going on then, especially in this area, in Alcalá. There were big flamencos and Morón. So,
were you living in Alcalá at that time period?
We lived in Seville at first, and then we moved to Alcalá. There was a bus from Seville through Alcalá to the base that ran often, and where the military could get the bus and take it to their work there. There were a lot of militaries who lived in Alcalá. It was closer to Morón than Seville.
Okay. So then in 68 you moved again?
Well, we moved in 66 to Heliópolis. So we were 2 years then in Heliópolis, in Sevilla, before we then moved back to New York State, to upstate New York.
So what did you do in New York when you went back?
My husband taught for community college, Rockland Community College in the Rockland County outside of New York City for a year.
1 year?
Yeah, 1 year. and then the next year we moved to Freeport, New York, which was on Long Island, which is where we were both from, and he got a job at teaching at the college he graduated from, which was Hofstra University.
Okay.
So we were there for 2 years, and we missed Spain, so we went back in 1971, the end of 1971, I believe.
Now, could you live and work in Spain at that time, because neither one of you come from Spanish backgrounds? How does that work?
It was not difficult.
No,
we didn't. I mean, I guess legally we were supposed to do something, and maybe we didn't. I'm not sure, but no, we didn't.
No problem.
Actually, when we left Spain the first time, which was in 68, we set up with a friend, another PhD, from New York, American, that we would do some recruiting while in Rockland County for students for a summer program, and that he would then deliver the program all around Seville, Madrid, the North, probably Santiago, I'm not sure, and back again, and then a southern part, Granada, Cordoba, Seville. And then we did that for one summer, and the students didn't seem to like what they got, so we went off on our own, and the friend went off on his own, and we started study abroad. It was called study and travel abroad. Was it study and travel in Spain? I don't remember. I have to look it up.
And so you did that from the States?
We did that from the States for two years. And then, because we were in the States for 3 years, but back in 68, 69, 70, 71. So the summer of 71, we returned to Seville. And actually, we were in Alcalá for a month or so. And then a friend of ours found a house for us in Heliópolis, and we bought it.
Okay.
I mean, it didn't cost much, you know. I can't remember what it was, but it wasn't very much. And after a year, that was when we started. Let's see. You're gonna have to stop that a minute. Okay. So I have to backtrack now. Okay. While we were. We had put an ad in some college papers and newspapers, also for teachers in New York State for the summer program. But then that was over, and we got interest in a special program for Union College in Schenectady, New York, when we were still, when Jerry was still teaching at Hofstra University. And so the study abroad advisor from Union College met us in New York with his wife, and told us what kind of a program they wanted for their students. They had 34 students, but would be for the next winter program, for really a quarter program, 10 weeks or so. So that's how it started. And that was given in 1972, in the winter of 1972, it'd be January. And it went well. And so the advisor from Union College said, why don't you start a study abroad program for everybody, you know? Anyway, we still have Union College from 2000, goes every other year they come for. So we had the first program for a college, a special program for a college, that was for Union College in December, or sorry, January through March for about 30-some students from Union College. Was taught mostly in Spanish. And then the director suggested that we do a complete study abroad in Spain for any student who, any college. Groups or non-groups. So we did start that. We didn't start that until 1975. So we were from 1971 in the fall to 1973 in the fall, we were in Spain. We bought the house in Heliopolis. And in 1973, we sold the house that we had just bought a year and a half ago, and figured we needed to go back to the States because we needed recruiting. There wasn't anybody to do the recruiting. So we went back in 1973, in the fall, in the spring, summer. And then we moved to So in the fall of 1970, I would say probably the end of August of 1973, we moved to Long Island, out Southampton, Long Island. And we were there for 2 years, and all the time setting it up so that we could come back and live in Spain, which we did in the summer of 1975. And that was when I first joined the American Women's Club, was in the fall of 1975. So then, and we lived in Alcalá for a year, but I still belonged to the Women's Club, as did a number of other women, because their husbands were at the base, mostly. But they had jobs at the base. And we, where am I now? 35. Okay, then in 76, we moved into the Barrio Santa Cruz in Sevilla, outside of Alcalá, of course. And we stayed there for about 5 years. And that was the year, my second year back in Spain was the year that I was president of the American Women's Club.
Okay. And your children were born in Spain, in the States?
I have, my oldest was born before we, in Minnesota, before we came over to Spain in 1960. And the next one was born in Marbella in 1961 in December in the house, because the hospital was not a real hospital. It had all kinds of It was a problematic hospital. It was just a town hospital, and I would have to go to the hospital in Malaga. So I had a doctor. I had a doctor and a midwife, and it was no problem. I was not exactly comfortable, but, you know, I mean, the doctor was good. And so my first son was born in December 1961. And then in October of 1962, we had decided that we were going to leave Marbella, and because my husband needed work. And so that's when we went to supposedly through Sevilla to Barcelona. We went to Sevilla, and that's when we stayed there. And that's when the rest of the history begins. Okay. So my second child was born in, we lived in Alcalá. He was born in, my third child, my second son. He was born in July 4th. Of 1963, and my third was born October 3rd of 1965, and then so that when we went back the first time in 1968, we went back with four children. Okay. And then we settled in Long Island for a couple of years. So then we're back now again to 1975, when we came back to Seville, lived for a year in Alcalá, and then moved to the body to Santa Cruz. And we were there for until 1981. My children went to Spanish schools, and a couple of them went to the conservatory, one of them for guitar and one of them for violin. And we just lived a regular life in the body of Santa Cruz.
So you had four children?
So in 75, no, we had a fifth child on Long Island, when we lived on Long Island, and they're all males except the oldest, and he was born in 1970. And that summer, right before he was born, we came back to Seville just for the summer because we had a summer group, and I stayed in an apartment in Madrid with my kids, and my husband took students around and gave them classes and so forth and so on from the States. And then we were 75, so we were in Seville then until 81. And okay, wait a minute. When we returned in 75, we returned with, summer of 71, we came back to Spain, and then in May of 72, we had our last child, who was born the end of May in 1972. So I must have left him out, poor thing. And so when we went back to the States and to Southampton, then we had the six. I think I did mention that, and we stayed there until 75, and then we're back in the States. Then we're back to Alcalá, and then back to the Barrio Santa Cruz, where I left off. And we stayed there until 81.
And what happened in 81?
Well, we decided that we had to go back because the children weren't doing very well in school, the younger ones. You know, we didn't like the school system, and they were failing, and they weren't stupid. all except the youngest doing very well. And so we decided that we really needed to take them back to the States to finish further their education. And so, of course, you know, that's difficult because, you know, they didn't use their English. They learned their first language, all of them, was Spanish because they had Spanish friends. And, you know, live in a town like Alcalá near school and the school and so forth. And, yeah, and then you have maids to help out because they cost almost nothing in those days. And so, you know, effectively, my husband and I would speak English to each other. They didn't understand it, but we had to learn Spanish while they were learning, you know, for a second language, while they were learning Spanish as their first language. So that was kind of curious.
Yeah.
Yeah. So back to the States we went. They didn't like that idea, but we our daughter was older, and she was in at the university. She did okay in school, and she went to Bellas Artes. And so we left her here in an apartment with a friend, and she finished her studies, her 5 years of Bellas Artes here in Seville, and we were in Long Island with the other five children who were going to school. From there, we moved to Amherst, Massachusetts, in about 83, because we heard there was a good school system there for the kids. And so we took them. One of them was already in college, and he'd gotten a scholarship to his father's college, which was Hofstra University. And then the second one, the third child did his last year, which was kind of hard. After all Spanish, in his last year, he did his final high school, and then graduated and went on to college as well. And then the rest of them continued in Amherst, Massachusetts, until 1991. So we were 10 years in the States, but every summer, let's go back a bit. In 1981 or 80, before we returned to the States with the boys, we built a house in a little town in the mountains called Grazalema, where it rains more than any place else in Spain all year long. And so we had built a house there. So when 81, when we left, that house was there waiting for us. And every summer, we would come over with the kids to spend, let's say, from June through August and into September, we would spend in Grazalema. So the kids had their friends, and they used their Spanish. They had a good time and so forth and so on. So we did that every year for 10 years. And then in 1991, there was the expo. So we decided to come back again for another year to see the expo.
To the World's Fair.
To the World's Fair. I'm sorry. Yes, the World's Fair in Seville. So we did. And that 1 year that we came back for ended up, we're still here. And so we never did return to the States, to New York or to Massachusetts for any length of time. We would visit, but we never, you know, we'd go over in the summer sometime. So that takes us to the World's Fair of 1992, actually, when we came and stayed.
Barbara, how did your family feel about you moving here originally? I mean, your parents.
Oh, well, my father had died, so he wasn't in the picture. But, my mother, she didn't like that we came here, and neither did Jerry's mother like that. But, you know, that's what happens. They didn't want to see you go away. And but we came anyway. And they visited us while we were here as well. So, but, you know, finally when we came to stay, actually my mother died in 95. So she was still alive, but she was in a nursing home. And I had two of my children lived in right near the nursing home, so they would visit her once in a while.
Okay. So let's talk about you and learning Spanish. What is the background there? Did you know Spanish when you came here at the beginning, or did you learn it throughout the years?
No, my language was French in high school and college, and so I spoke French, and so I wanted to go to Paris, of course, because, you know. But anyway, it was too expensive to live there. It was much less expensive to live in Spain than it was to live in Paris, and or in France, anywhere really. So that's what made us go to Spain. So I effectively learned Spanish from living there. I took one class in Spanish once I knew it, but here, you know, it was a class in theater, but it was not a language class. So I never did have a Spanish language class.
So you just picked it up as you went along.
Well, yeah, I mean, you go to the store, you have to buy meat, you have to buy this, you have to buy that, and you make a lot of mistakes. You know, I ask for something that sounds really raunchy, and you know, you realize that it's wrong.
So, yeah. Did you find that to be easy or difficult?
Well, it was a struggle. Sometimes it was a struggle because, you know, I would remember most of the words, you know, like you know, vegetables, meats, toilet paper. You have to remember what that is. In fact, we were asked one time when we were living out in the campo what toilet paper was for. They thought it was to cover what you did. Because when my husband asked for the toilet paper in this little tiny store there was in the campo where we lived that one summer, out in El Angel, which is now that fancy place on the coast between San Pedro and Marbella, I can't remember, Puerto Banús, and there were people who built Puerto Banús were living in that little tiny aldea that only had like one little store.
That tiny little town, yeah.
Yeah, tiny little town. And they had their own cows, and if you were nursing a child, you got the milk before anybody else, and if not, you know, you stayed in line and get the milk. Sometimes it was more than others on the cows. So where was I? I see. So my husband went to the little store that was there and asked for papel higiénico, and a guy wanted to know what it was for, you know, and when he told him, you know, clean yourself, and so he said, una piedra y lista. So we're thinking,
a rock and that's it.
Because how many says to me, we have to use a rock. So I said, oh no, wait a minute. So, well, then he went into the town and he got some toilet paper. But we found out what that meant was that they would just, since nobody had toilets out there, they would just do it out in the camp, out in the countryside off the main little road that they had and cover it with a rock. Because we'd pick up a rock and we'd see that that's what it was there for. I mean, it's not a nice way. You don't have to include that. It's just an aside.
How important do you think learning Spanish was for your new life in Seville?
That's very important. If you want to mix with the people and you want to learn about them and you want to, you know, have friends that are who are Spanish, which most of our friends were Spanish. We had some friends from the base of wives of my doctor at the base, his wife, my dentist's wife, some other wife of people that of officers in the military there, Americans, and we did a lot of things with those people, and we went to flamenco gatherings and so forth with Americans who liked that as well, who got into the Spanish style of having a good time, let's say, eating and so forth.
How about your adaptation to your new life in Seville? What was it like to adapt to Seville?
I don't really remember. Well, you just like you go anywhere new, you have to you have to discover what there is there that you need and what there is that there is not that you need, and work around that, and not really need what is not available. So I didn't. You know, there were some things I would complain about, and I still do. It was livable. It worked, and it was a nice way to live. We liked the weather was great, and how could you ask for more sun? I was cold in the winter all the time. My feet were always cold. It seems like, you know, and you didn't have the kind of heat in your home that you have now. Yet they had from the military base, you could get kerosene heaters, which were really dangerous. But they sold them, these heaters that, you know, you filled with kerosene. And you had to watch them. You know, if you closed one into the bathroom and you go open the door one time and the whole place was filled with carbon monoxide. So, you know, but we could make it do well.
Yeah.
And have a good time and, you know, enjoy.
Do you remember anything that was particularly different way of lifestyle between the States and Spain back then?
Oh, it was very different, yeah. It was very different. I mean, besides the fact that there was a dictatorship, which really, and as far as we were concerned, did not affect us. I mean, we could... There was very little crime, I have to say, that we knew of. And... we had Spanish friends, but they never talked about politics. And theoretically, they weren't allowed. We were living in Heliopolis most of that time. They weren't. They weren't allowed to have a group of people in their homes. And so what happened was that your friends would go out and eat out together. There was a lot of bar hopping, tapa, snacks. You get snacks in this bar with a drink and with a group of friends, Spanish friends, and then you would go to another bar and get another set of snacks and glass of wine or beer or Coke or whatever you wanted. And that was going out, and that was meeting with friends, because they just did not have much meeting with friends in their homes. Or they would go out on a Sunday.
It wasn't allowed, or they just didn't do it?
You were not allowed. Legally, you could not have more than three people, as far as I know, visiting you at a time, unless they were family. Because people were plotting against Franco.
So this was before 1975?
Oh, yeah. This was in the 60s.
In the 60s?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, then the people who... thought that Franco was good, or who made believe they thought that he was good because they had to, then they turned around, they changed, and they realized that, you know, he was a dictator and they didn't want a dictator, and, you know, some of them were still Franquistas, but I would say that most of them were not. And some of them were communist leaning, and they were the ones who were frightened when... they had the takeover of the in Madrid of the Congress. Oh, what's his name? I can't remember the name of the military man who took over in the Congress when that happened. It was in 1976, I think.
Okay. Did you know anyone in Seville before you arrived?
No. No, nobody.
No?
We first arrived in Malaga, you know, and we didn't know anybody in any place in Spain before we arrived.
Nobody. So you met different people through the Air Force Base in Morón?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Any other way that you met people at the beginning?
In the stores, on the streets. In the beginning, we lived in Heliopolis for... about a half a year, and you go to the market, you have neighbors, They play in the streets because there's not much traffic in the streets in Heliopolis, and so the kids were playing. And then there was a little placita, a little park, like a block, square block long, where the kids played ball. And so you get to, the children are the ones who really introduce you to your new friends.
How did your diet change when you essentially moved to Spain compared to what it was like in the States?
More beans, lentils, garbanzos, and not much in the way of fish, if I remember well. And meat, lots of pork, as far as the meat goes, and a lot of fruit and vegetables. We eat out a lot with our Spanish friends because that was where they met their friends, as I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you must not have had a lot of free time between all the kids and such, but any other free time that you did have, how did you spend it?
Yeah, we did, because we had maids to take care of the kids. We had, you know, we had niñera, we had a cleaning lady, and then we had a regular maid. And somebody who came twice a week to wash and iron. You know, all you had to do was feed them, the poor things. They didn't have any money. And so, you know, if you just... We lived on $5,000 a year until the end of the 60s, until 68. And as I said, we still had a couple of huergas each year, a couple of flamenco shows,
yeah,
each year.
So you ate out a lot. Did you have any other activities that you particularly remember?
We went to the theater, we went to music, and there wasn't a lot of music because there wasn't a good orchestra. It was a Betty's orchestra, and it was pretty bad. But when the Expo came was when Seville developed culturally much more. So that, but we did go out. We went out with friends, and there was theater, and there were zarzuelas, which there are not much now except in Madrid. And an opera or two we'd hear in the Lope de Vega. Movies.
Have your interests changed much throughout the years?
Yeah, well, since we came to Spain, you know, I mean, because there, it was different, because there was flamenco. But it was always changed in it was larger area. We had more to do. I mean, we had flamenco, we had opera, we had all of those other things in Spain, especially after 91. So there was always something to do.
Do you remember your first impression of Spain?
Yes, I came because my husband went first to Paris. His brother was there and with NATO, and he went to Paris, and his brother told him it wasn't good for him to stay in Paris. It was too expensive. So that's when he went to Spain. And anyway, what was your question?
Your first impression of Spain.
So, and then I went over with my daughter. I had a charter flight to London because we didn't know where we were going to be when I first got the flight. And I would fly with her from London to wherever Jerry had settled. What's your question again?
Your first impression of Seville.
Oh, the impression. Okay. So I'm on the. I'm flying then from to Mallorca, and first we go to Catalonia to Barcelona, from Barcelona to the Baleares, and so my first impression was getting off the plane and seeing all these police, all these military men around. They were in the military. I thought they were military. I couldn't tell you if they were the Guardia Civil or what. But I think they were, and they still are, right? In the airports. And
right, the Spanish National Police, yeah.
Bunch of policemen, and you know, it was kind of shocking to see all these policemen around and nobody else except some of the passengers. And then I had to go through customs. Well, I had never been any place outside of the United States to go through customs, and so it was all kind of scary, you know.
And that was my first impression. All right. And after you went through customs and you actually got into the city, do you remember what you saw? Was there anything that stood out?
Well, I didn't go into the city. I went from Barcelona to Palma, Mallorca.
Right.
We had to fly to from London to Barcelona, and then from Barcelona I got on another plane to Palma.
Yeah.
And by that time I had already been through the experience, and so and then my husband was there to pick me up with the, my daughter, and otherwise a first experience sort of just moving around. It was very different. I just what I noticed was that everything was very different. Everything was kind of backwards.
In that, what way?
I mean, that you know, my first impression.
Yeah.
Yeah. In what way?
Yeah.
Let's see. Well, I guess it was less developed country than the United States. And I'd seen it in Canada a bit, but it wasn't, that's the only place I've been.
Okay. Thank you. Very interesting. Barbara, when did you join the American Women's Club of Seville, the AWC?
Yes, I joined the AWC in 1975. After we returned in the summer, well, then in the fall, I joined the AWC for the first time. I knew it existed, but I was busy with the kids and all that, and when I didn't have the money to join the AWC. It wasn't expensive, but I couldn't go to the luncheons anyway, so I didn't join until, actually, what got me to join was that before we had went back, when my youngest child was born in 72, I had friends who were in the women's club, and one of them was Evelyn
Wyman?
No. Anyway, she represented the women's club. I don't think she was a president, although she might have been. And she brought a present from the women's club for my new baby. And, you know, I thought that was so sweet. And, you know, so that then the next time we came back, I immediately joined the women's club. We lived in Alcalá. It was 1975. We lived in Alcalá for 1 year then before moving into the Barrio Santa Cruz. So then the next year, which was 76, I was asked to be the president, and I was living, I said, as long as I'm living in Seville, I will do that, you know, so I did, and that was the year, the only year that I was president, 76, 77.
Okay. Why did you join the club?
Well, the reason is that I knew people who were in the club, and I knew it was a positive thing for me, and I had gotten the gift from, and I just thought it was a great place to join because there were a lot of activities then. It was very different than it is now. There weren't as many people, and a lot of the American women who joined were married to men who were working at the base, at the U.S. Spanish Air Force Base in Morón. And so it made a different group of people. Of Americans also, because the wives were not working, most of them. And so they had time to go to women's club activities and meetings. And the Spanish, anybody could join the American Women's Club as long as they spoke English. So for the Spanish, it was prestigious for them to join. Either the wealthy ones, the ones who went to the right schools, you know, the Irlandesas. So they would join, and it was prestigious for them to do so. And that made a big difference in the society, the Spanish society.
Can you tell me about some of the first events that you went to?
Well, luncheons we had in restaurants, the same as we do now. But we might have had more people in the restaurants. And there were, the restaurants were not as full as they are these days. There weren't as many of them. The Spanish women were, as I say, were very different than the ones who are there now. The ones who are there now seem to be more so because maybe they have a job to offer. Maybe they have maybe they have work that people could use. So, and let me see how I can explain that. So they were working in, maybe one would be a dentist, maybe a woman. They weren't before, many of these. And so maybe they could get some clients. I mean, nowadays, it's more, it seems more like that. But I'm not sure, because there are a lot of Spanish women who have joined now. And they most of them are working, so, and they have, or they have children and they're and working too. So they don't have much time to do luncheons, for example. So what would happen was that the Spanish women from wealthy households, husbands, because they were brought up to speak English and so forth and so on. And that was very prestigious, as I said. Several of them were wives of men who owned bull ranches. So they had plenty of money and they liked to show off. So they would invite the members of the women's club to visit their bull farm. And they would get a bus to take us out to the farm and to the, what do you call it, the bull ranch. And they'd give us lunch, usually a paella, and we'd have a tour of it. All of this was free. And, you know, because it made them important. And this was what was important to them, was to the Spanish women, to, in their own society, it made them more important. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
So we went to several different bull ranches. Yeah.
All right. The American Women's Club of Seville has several different subgroups, let's say. For example, there's the book club.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about way back when, what sort of subgroups existed?
Yes. And it wasn't all just American Women's Club. But it was mostly, let's say, American Women's Club. There was a book club. Some of us who lived in the center of Seville area, we had a poetry reading group. Gatherings in some people's homes. In the America, usually they were Americans with Americans. There weren't too many. I mean, the British consul and his wife were members. We're in a group where we go to different pieces, people's houses, and read poetry. And what else? I really can't think of much else. Maybe there would be a flamenco show that we would go to together. But there weren't a lot of activities. Maybe you can think of some that they have now that maybe there were, and I can't.
It was mostly luncheons.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you were president in 1976. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Did you hold any other board positions or committee positions?
I might have. I mean, I've held a book club. I was head of the book club. For a while, Carol and I were together, and then I took it over because she had a lot to do.
Carol Chrysler,
let's see. I can't remember much of anything else. I mean, it was not difficult to be the president. You didn't have all these different things going on that there are now. And we didn't have children's activities at the beginning. Because a lot of the women belonged to the base and they had their own activities at the military base and the schools, the children's schools. There weren't too many people like me or my family who weren't connected really to anything except the base, because that's where my husband was teaching.
So if the American Women's Club didn't have children's activities, then are you saying that the children of the other women went to mostly base activities for children, or they didn't have children?
No, they had children.
They did.
They had. They lived in, a lot of them lived in Santa Clara, which was where the school was. And that was the military, the U.S. officers' neighborhood.
Right, in Seville's Santa Clara neighborhood.
Right. And so they had activities there. They had them through the school, the American school that the kids went to, and the base, you know, there too. So there, it wasn't any need for it, really. I mean, there were some people living here who were not connected to the base, but there weren't very many.
So what was a board meeting like back then?
I can't remember. I mean, I don't even know if we had a board meeting, to tell you the truth.
Okay. How about the newsletters or telephone calls? What was your means of communication?
Yeah, they were, the newsletter got sent by mail to all the members. And I don't even know if, when I was president, if I wrote something in the newsletter, I suppose so, but it was such a minor thing that, you know, it wasn't of much importance, except that we all awaited the arrival of each month's newsletter to see what was going on and, you know, whose finca, whose bull ranch we could go to, or what other activity there might be.
So if you wanted to go, what did you do?
You sign up. So how do you sign up? I guess you call, right? No mobile phones. You call from your home phone.
You call somebody and sign up.
You whoever it is in charge, you sign up for it. And anything else that was happening that wasn't in the newsletter, you would have to get a phone call about, or another message written message. It was written more than anything else.
And that's written in a letter format and mailed to you.
Yes, yes. Or, you know, oftentimes it was just between a few among a few people. But, yeah, we didn't... there weren't that many members, actually, really. It was mostly the officers' wives.
Okay.
And the wealthy Spanish. I don't know if you remember, I'm trying to remember names. And we had a couple of titled members of the club, Spanish titled members, you know, the Marquesa of whatever it is. And, one of them, they lived on the calle Zaragoza, the Maestrantes, that's what they're called. That is the members of the Blue Blood book. The Blue Book. In the States, it's called the Blue Book.
Okay. What about the charity activities back then?
There were some charity activities. I don't remember having been involved, but we didn't do an activity for charity. We gave a certain amount of the dues went to two charities. I believe we would figure out which ones are there. But we didn't have anything special to earn money for the charities in those days. And I don't, you know, I was away before 91. So I don't really know what they did then. I was not in the club because I was only here in the summertime.
Right.
But then from then on, there were more activities and more concern about it, but obviously not until relatively recently, because we were giving to an organization that couldn't care less, and you know that we never got thank you for it. It was not, you know, a real it wasn't something we worked for. I think we gave to charity because that was one of the reasons we had to exist.
Yeah. Do you remember which charity it was?
Well, the last one we gave up was there for a long time. I can't remember which one it was. Do you know the one that we turned down? And the Los Pobres.
Okay.
That, yeah, la Hermandad de los... No, not...
Hermanitas.
Hermanitas de los Pobres.
Yeah. And before that, do you remember the charities that we had? No.
No, there was another one, but I can't remember what it was.
Okay. Okay. Do you remember when the American Woman started Club started giving 50% of their dues money to charity?
No. I think maybe from the very beginning.
Maybe so.
Because that's all we gave. I mean, we didn't, you know, maybe there was, I know what we did. We had raffles. At the meals, we had raffles. And so, you know, you buy one cost to whatever is euros. Nowadays, I can't remember how many pesetas it was. But one cost 2 euros and two cost 3 euros.
Right, okay.
And so that would, raffle money was the way we got money for the charities other than what we gave from our dues.
Okay. Do you remember any other big events that went on other than the Bull Ranches?
Well, Christmas party.
Oh, tell me about
them. We had a Christmas party in the evening right before Christmas in a large restaurant, usually, because... Mm-hmm. Husbands came also, and it was a fancy meal. And when my time after the 90s was when I really went to these things more, you know, what's her name? Liz had Flaherty's.
Liz Enright.
Liz Enright, and she had they had another one that was down by the Macarena. Down by the Puente del Alamillo. It was...
Los Perdigones.
Yes, exactly, you got it. And that was, those were nice ones also. And, the Christmas. What else did we have? We did have Thanksgiving, too, but I can't remember much about that, to tell you the truth.
No. Okay. The Christmas parties, where were they held?
They were held at nice restaurants in Seville. But speaking of that, in Seville, and I think once there was an American caseta. There were two. One of them, that's yours. One of them was... let's see now. What did I say?
American caseta.
Okay. And that was when really, really, really early on, they had one for the NGOs and they had one for the officers, a caseta for the officers, and they had one for the non-officers.
Wait, so this is a modern army base.
This is in the 60s.
Caseta.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is in the 60s.
Yeah.
And they were owned by American, you know, the base, I guess.
Okay.
Somehow. So I went to that one time, I think. But that was earlier on, and I didn't, you know, go to those much. But what else? That was about it, as far as I remember.
Do you remember at one point that the American Women's Club of Seville was held activities at the U.S. Consular Agency in Seville?
Oh, yes. Well, that was at the U.S. Consulate. It wasn't the agency. That was an actual full-fledged consulate. And so they had a consul general there, which is important, too. It's not just the U.S. consul. It's a consul general. And the reason they had the consulate there was because of the base. So once the base, once the Americans left the base, let's say, you know, 80s, late 70s, 70, the consulate became a consular agency. They had the building because that was given to them from, that was part of the 1929 World's Fair, that building was. And they had it until, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago. And then it became a consular agency, and the person who ran it was not a consul, he was a consular agent. And they didn't have ownership of the building any longer at some point, but I don't know what year it was. And that's when they moved to the Plaza Nueva to an office in the Plaza Nueva.
Okay.
But we had big parties there. We had 4th of July, And so there was that entertainment that the American Women's Club had also. And the Spanish women went to the 4th of July, and they had maybe sometimes Thanksgiving and Christmas parties, you know, parties for the American bullfighter John Fulton, for example. He was a very good friend of one of the consul generals' family.
John Fulton, the bullfighter, yes. Right. So do you remember at the Christmas parties that were held there, what you did, what everybody did?
Well, we all got together and sang, and we drank champagne or whatever they happened to have. And I don't believe we paid anything for it. I think it was, you know, just open to Americans and their friends.
Then what did we eat?
A meal. A potluck. Oh, we did bring that. Yeah, that's good. We did take at certain points, probably maybe more than anything in the 70s, we would take a pot of something to eat, and the consulate would supply the drinks. I believe that's the way it was, but I'm not sure. I think so.
What about a raffle at the Christmas party?
Well, we did have, you're reminding me that we did have special raffles, and it wasn't just, you know, maybe a bottle of wine or some flowers or plant or something like that, but this was raffles that a lot of people contributed to. And so you had a big basket, or maybe you had four or five baskets of different things that have been contributed to, and then you got more money for the raffle, for the companies, who we gave them, can't remember what it is, the charity that we gave to. They would get a big amount at Christmas time. I don't remember if we had any special thing other than the raffles for getting Christmas money to the charities. I don't remember that.
I don't think so.
And what else? Let's see. You know, we'd sing. We'd chat. I think the biggest, most appreciated activity or party that they had at the consulate was the 4th of July, because, you know, that's our big day. And you'd spend some money, put the flag up, you know.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of other things that we did, and, you know, I can't remember what was necessarily just the women's club or what was friends and not the women's club. Because they, you know, when the Fouché was the consul general, they had three children, and then Helen, the wife's sister, had a child, an older boy, who was staying with them while they were in the consulate. Why were they living at the consulate? They had three boys, and then the older boy, the youngest one, was maybe three or so. And there was somebody by the name of Barbara Schutzman had a Montessori school in the Bahia Santa Cruz. She, American, her husband was studying medicine, and she opened a Montessori school. So the consul's little boy went there, my son went there, my youngest son went there also. And he went in the morning to the Montessori school in English, and in the afternoon he went to the public school from 3 to 5 when they did Spanish. So he got a good basic education in both languages, yeah. The other ones didn't, the little one did.
Which other AWC members were you closest to at that time, or that you met regularly with?
I had, when we were at the base. Let's see. I met with wives of, I don't know if you know, Betty Ingalls. Her husband worked at the base. He was, I don't know, some kind of officer. And, you know, wives for American friends, wives of the people who were still at the base while it was going. Otherwise, it was my Spanish friends that I knew from a long time ago. And friends, for example, when we met in the 60s, we lived across the street in Heliopolis. The kids played together. And we were invited. Across the street lived a lawyer and his wife and three children. And then we were invited, the first New Year's Eve we were here, we were invited by them to take, to go out to Gines, or one of the towns outside of Seville, for New Year's Eve. So we made friends with them, and through friends we made other friends. So we had a group of Spanish friends who we would go out with every Friday night. And this was beginning then later on in, well, no, we began this in the 60s, but we did it more with more people beginning in 91.
Okay. And which, do you remember which AWC members you saw the most of back then?
Yeah, back then I guess I saw Gay, Carol Christer Gay, DeRoss, I guess that's her last name, Sanchez Pith one. Let's see. Probably if I heard the name, I would remember. And Becky, which Becky had the bookstore.
Rebecca Bufana.
Rebecca Bufana, right. Eleanor Formica. That's the name of the woman who was... some of these people lived in the in a Port Benit, and they knew each other. They're not in the club now. They're older. So let's see. I guess if I heard the name, I could, you know, remember it. But right now, who's the one who lives out near you, who has, I met her at your birthday party again. After a long time, she was married to
Sally Duque.
Yes, Sally.
Sally Duque.
Right, Sally Duque. Yeah, well, she was in a group there. She did more things at that point when I first came, you know, before she got so involved with her husband, which took her away from the women's club because she didn't. It's been a long time. She's been since she's been a member.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think she's about my age.
How did being a member of the American Women's Club affect your experience of life here?
Well, it made it more interesting. I found more things to do. I met more people. My children met children of the Women's Club also, and Eleanor Formica, Becky also, and Carol. Well, her children were younger, I guess. We lived in Heliopolis at the same time at some point when her twins were born, the boys. But we've always been friends. So it enriched my experience here in Seville and keeping in touch with the Americans as well. And they, almost all of them, were married to Spaniards.
Barbara, what do you think you have brought to the American Women's Club?
Oh, well, any knowledge I might have had that, you know, I could share with them. The building that we own for the Centro Norteamericano in the Calle Arenas. Actually, there are two buildings. Hola, siento. Bueno. Let's see where we were. You have to stop.
What you have brought to the club.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And so we have a school that it was primarily set up for American students to come to a study program in Seville to study Spanish and to improve their Spanish. And at the same time, we had English courses. We taught English courses for Spanish people. And so we got eventually purchased two buildings, and they're large, and there's plenty of room for other activities too. So I was able to offer the American Women's Club space and a library at one point for them to use, for us to use. And so I think that that was probably the main contribution. Is a bit, and the big patio downstairs, we for a long time have had the morning coffee introduction meeting. I guess they call it coffee morning, but we might change that. it's more like a home. It became somewhat of a home to the American Women's Club. But that somewhat changed after the pandemic because we didn't have any students, so you know, we don't have any income, you don't have any, and you can't go out anyway, you can't have meetings. So then we got the Zoom and all the rest of that. But yeah, I think we could say that the building was the best thing that I could offer.
And can you tell me about those coffee mornings?
Yes, I'm still not really sure how everybody finds out about it because people who've gone to the coffee mornings before, which are about the last Saturday or next to the last Saturday in September, most of them, they know it, and so they know when they're going to find out when it is. Otherwise, I believe maybe there are notices put up at the consular agency now in Seville about the coffee morning. And it's a way to introduce or reintroduce Americans or English-speaking people to the club. And we have it catered, coffee, delicious cakes, sandwiches. It runs in the morning from about 10:30 to about 2 in the afternoon, and we're eating all the time, and we're talking, and we're having a general meeting, and the president is presented, and the other officers as well, and it's just a great time starting up the club again in the end of September.
So it's a kick-off the year type
kick-off,
of activity.
Yeah, it's definitely a kick-off, yeah.
Barbara, do you think events such as cultural celebrations from the U.S., and other countries are important to you, like Thanksgiving or Independence Day?
Not personally, no. I don't find them special. You know, if I'm in the States, it's special because they make a big thing of it, and it is the 4th of July, and, you know, and Thanksgiving is the biggest American holiday there is. And I don't miss it if I don't have it. Let's put it that way. I guess I'm old enough so that I've had lots of them. And, you know, I like to see that there is a Thanksgiving luncheon. I'm sorry that some of the non-American members don't like it because it ended up being the November luncheon. And so that's fine. I can see that too. So this year, I think, is the first year we didn't have a Thanksgiving luncheon. Is that correct? No. So I believe that that's the case. Well, we didn't have it, obviously, when we had the pandemic. I don't remember if we didn't, did we? So no. I'm American, and I'm proud of it. But I don't have any, you know, big need for celebration. I celebrate Spanish holidays because everybody around does that. Because of Feria, Semana Santa. At this point, Semana Santa is not Semana Santa anymore, as far as I'm concerned, because there are too many people. And you know, it was when I was first, my first Semana Santas were during the Franco period. And I do have to say that there were less crimes. And fewer people, less crimes as well. And you could see they would turn off all the lights in the center of the city, all of them. There were no street lights on at all. And so you could see the shadows of the pasos of the Christ or whatever the figure was. Or
the images that were going down the street.
You could see the shadows up against the walls. You can't see that anymore. You could run between the pasos coming and going between the Calle Cuna and the Calle Mendez Nunez, the three streets that cross there, and nobody stopped you. And now it's not even Semana Santa, and you can't even go up the hill to the Cuesta del Rosario. It's just a mess. And so I'm older, I can't be knocked down by people, and they do get kind of pushy because they want to get through. So it's not like it used to be, but nothing is ever like it used to be, so you can't expect that it's going to happen.
Right.
So my take.
Thank you. What about your family and participating in American Women's Club events? Did your children or your husband participate much?
No, we did. If men were invited, like to the consulate, when we had some activity at the consulate, men, the husbands would go. Yes, yeah, they would go. They did not go to the activities that earlier on in the 60s that were held at the Bull Ranches or at other people's country homes. That was just for the women. But anything that was held in the evening, and that's why your Christmas dinner was in the evening, anything that's held in the evening, then the husbands would go.
And your children, did they participate?
My daughter is, the boys, they're all boys except the one. And she's got her own things going, but she does belong to the American Women's Club.
And when they were children, did they participate?
No.
Okay.
There wasn't anything for them.
Nothing for them?
No, not okay. That I remember.
Barbara, do you think it's important that the American Women's Club of Seville is precisely a club for women?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, and you know, the men wish they had one too, and they tried to develop one at various times. And it never really went through. You know, maybe they have two meetings, and then they're just not organized. They have to go out and drink, you know. It's almost impossible because also most of the men are working and the women are working now too. But they still go to activities on weekends, tours. I mean, We didn't have much in the way of tours. I'll get back to that. But earlier on, let's say. But I do remember at the beginning of the World's Fair, I do remember taking groups around to the churches before Semana Santa or the first day of Semana Santa and taking them around Seville to see the pasos, but it wasn't, nobody paid me for it. I mean, you know, we just, those who could did things for the club like that, showing people places or taking them to the Jueves, which is the Friday, Thursday flea market, effectively. And it's interesting to see that. A lot of people hear about the Jueves, but they don't know what it is. And actually, I don't think anybody's, I think somebody set up something recently, but I'm not sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, but absolutely. We need a women's club. And the men probably should have a men's club, but, you know, I don't know. I don't think they know how to get along with each other.
Okay. Is there anything that you would like to add about the American Women's Club of Seville back in the day? Anything else you remember you want to contribute? Talk about?
Yes, I think it was really right on. I mean, it was needed at the time because there were a number of American women in, you know, outside of their country in Seville, another culture, and they needed help, and they got it from the women's club. So now it has become even, you know, we have many more questions about how to do this, what to do, but there are so many more things you have to do for the government, or whether it's for taxes or whether it's for legality being in the country. There are lots of things to do, and the Women's Club can help anybody with anything like that they have to do.
Right. How has life changed in Seville since you moved here, Barbara?
Oh, yeah, a lot. It's changed a lot. it's grown larger. I don't think that there are that many more people living in the city, in the city limits of Seville. There are a lot more who've moved out to the Aljarafe, or they have moved to Alcalá and Mairena del Alcor, which is on the way to Morón. Dos Hermanas is another town that's getting quite large, that has people who work in Seville or say they live in Seville. Yeah.
What do you think about healthcare in Spain?
Oh. Well, it seems like when we were first here, we had to get private insurance. And you still more or less have to get private insurance. But it seems like after COVID, or during COVID, I got Social Security. And I never earned Social Security because I didn't work here. And all of a sudden, I find out that I have Social Security. And if you're a certain age, you don't have to pay for it. If you're not, and you're a foreigner, you can still get it and pay for it. So I have Social Security, and I also have private insurance. The private insurance I had before. And so now Social Security. So, you know, it's not as good as it is in where I come from, the health care. I mean, every year you get this done and you get that done and the other thing done. If in the Social Security, if you have what's called a family doctor, effectively, from Social Security, that person could be really very good or not very good at all. And I happened to get one of the not very good at alls. She was nice, but never had any tests done except once a urine test when it was obvious that I had a urinary infection. But she never got me the blood tests. So I just recently changed to another doctor, another female doctor, which is kind of annoying because I don't seem to get along with female doctors because they don't seem to do a very good job. I don't know. The ones I've had, let's put it that way. But this one asked me when the last time was that I had blood tests. I recently saw her. I said a year and a half, and she said, well, you need to have blood tests. So we'll see how she goes. But you can also get a family doctor and your private insurance. But they don't want to see your body. You don't take your clothes off. You never get weighed unless you weigh too much, you know. And then you know you're in death row. But they're not very thorough unless they find something. And then I hear that they're very good about making sure to get the proper care. But after you get to a certain age, there are certain things that you know, you say you have this problem or that problem. And the question that you get from the doctor, all my friends who are older, how old are you? Well, what do you expect? And so that's my take right now because of my age. But I had children here. I had two children. I had one in the house. I had two at the base, the U.S. base at Morón, and I had one in the Virgen del Rocío right after the hospital was built, and they were all good.
Okay. How do you feel about transportation system in Seville?
Oh, I guess it's pretty good. I mean, compared to other places, you know, I'm from New York City, and so transportation is, there's always transportation there, you know. I think they've done a pretty good job of transportation. They started to build a subway, an underground, in the early 70s. They started it in the Plaza Nueva. And they had the Plaza Nueva blocked off for almost 13 years. It was cut off. You couldn't go there because they had started it and then they decided they weren't going to do it. It was political. Besides, you know, maybe there was some problem about what was underneath. I don't know, but it's dug out under the Plaza Nueva. And then finally, a mayor said, we got to get rid of this. We got to build up the Plaza Nueva again. But
and when was that, more or less?
That the Plaza Nueva one was let's say 73. They started. I'm trying to figure out when we knew the mayor then. And he was a friend of ours because he worked in. He owned one of the schools that we had our classes in at first. Anyway, I guess it must have been 72.
Okay. What do you feel about the quality of life in Seville?
Well, I like it. I mean, it's not the best. The air is not the best, and you can see that on your telephone, your weather every day. But the sun is beautiful. I love the flowers from the sun. It's nice when it rains. It hasn't rained, and it's a big problem right now. You're talking about the air, more or less, or you're talking about just
the quality of life.
Well, everybody likes to go to parties. Everybody, you know, go to the bar and the parties. I mean, you go out on a Thursday night is a night to go out. And I discovered that quite a while back when we had a library and a librarian, because he would come in every Friday morning, maybe late, but unable to do anything. He knew exactly what he did the night before. And I have sons who would go out at night too, and when they were older. And anyway, it's a fun society. They have a good time, and they know how to have a good time, and they laugh all the time, and they maybe annoy you because they laugh so loudly, but it's part of the culture, and it's what makes it so beautiful, really.
What do you miss about the States?
Well, I miss being closer to my children, who I have three who live in the same town in Massachusetts where we took them. I miss seeing them because they don't come too often. I have two living here, and that's nice. I have one in Florida. I don't really miss very much, not in my age anyway. I did miss skiing for a while because I skied a lot, and which is why we went up to the Massachusetts from New York, so we could go skiing up in Vermont and so forth and so on. But no, I don't really miss it, no.
Okay. So, talking about the Semana Santa, you told us before sort of your opinion about it. Did you want to add anything else about it, other than the multitude of people?
No, it was just really, really, really special in the 60s and maybe into the 70s too. But as soon as... people came to Spain for crime as well, because I don't know why, but they were
because the crime rates were low here.
But then they went up, and I mean, you know, they were definitely low under Franco, and I think that the people who lived here didn't want any trouble. They'd had enough. And so they were, you know, honest, hardworking people who in those days, in the 60s, they would, images would be carried around by men who were paid to do this. They were not brothers. And it was a shock when the first brotherhood, the members of the brotherhood, actually carried the images on their shoulder. This, because they were too upper class to do something like this, you know? And one of them did it. I don't know if it was, I can't remember, but anyway, one of them did it, and it was like, oh, you know, and everybody got together, and then all of them were being carried by brothers of the brotherhood, and none of them were paid to do it. In fact, they paid to carry them. They have to pay for their neck things and, you know, so forth and so on.
When did that change happen?
I really don't know. I think the first time it happened was probably, I think it was probably after Franco. Probably, you know, in the early 80s, late 70s.
Okay.
late 70s.
And how do you feel about Seville's April Fair?
Another thing that has grown quite a bit, which is what you expect, because any place where you can go and have a good time is attractive to people who visit it, and it's great. It's nice that they have the regional dance, the Sevillanas, it's gotten too long. I think when it was only a little under a week long, like maybe from Monday night to maybe Saturday night the next week. But now it's gotten several days more, and it's too much. I just find that it's too long. Yeah, I have gone to the bullfights. I like the bullfights, and of course that's about the only time of the year when they have good bullfights, you know, except then on Sundays and holidays and so forth. I like it. I think it's a great thing for the Sevilla.
So which attracts you more, the Holy Week, the Easter Week, or the Seville's Fair?
They're two different things. They're both the same. I just, you know, see something different, do something different, but they're both important and very special.
Right. Were you in Seville during any major events or transitions in the history? For example, the end of Franco. Did life change?
Yes.
In what way?
Yes. well, they had manifestations. We had the school on the Plaza San Francisco, which is at the end of the Avenida de la Constitución, which used to be called José Antonio Rivera. What's his name? José Antonio Primo de Rivera. That was the name of the main street, I think. Yeah. Anyway, they would walk down past the cathedral, the groups with, Andalusia. That was the flag of Andalusia. And this was right after Franco's death, shortly after, actually, but, a couple of years. But still, they had much more freedom to demonstrate against what was going on. I don't remember the question to begin with, but I think it was what...
About Franco, how life changed.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things. And but when they had the golpe as in Madrid, when the Guardia Civil was going to take over and thought that maybe Juan Carlos, recent king, who was assigned as king by Franco. In fact, when he was brought up, being taught to be king by Franco. The Guardia Civil, who were trying to switch back to the dictatorship, they took over Madrid for, I guess it was 30 some hours. The TV, the radio, and everything. Was being conquered by them, and but Juan Carlos, the king, did not side with them. He went for the democracy, and that made a big difference.
Did your life change much?
No. I mean, I wasn't somebody who was going to go out and demonstrate anyway, and it didn't matter to me whether it was this or that or the other thing. I was not into politics. There was no place for me in politics in Spain.
Barbara, what are your memories of the Expo 92, which was the World's Fair held here in Seville?
Yes, that's interesting because it was in 92. It started, I believe, about the fair time, April, of 92, and it was great. You could even say it wasn't so good because it modernized Seville, and so Seville was never the same after the Expo. People thought in different ways because it used to be when it first started, World's Fair, We had people from all different countries dancing and shows and so forth and so on. And some of them were from Africa, and they would dance half naked, and the Spaniards would laugh at them. But if you went in August or September, it wasn't funny anymore. It was just part of the reality of another culture. It changed Seville really a lot. I think it changed the people's mentality, and it made them more interested in knowing about other societies, and you know, realizing that there was something besides Seville and Spain, and that was good. It really developed quite a bit, but it also lost some of its charm because it was influenced by what people in other countries did, and they got a lot of that then. It was a great time. Yeah.
Barbara, you mentioned before that you knew the wives from the American air bases. Did you visit the base yourself very often?
I did, not much. No, they had a commissary on, I believe it was Kai Irundain. They had a big building that was the where you could buy goods, American goods. I mean, they did have one at the base as well, but they had one in Seville, in El Puerto Venice area, so that you know people who lived in the city who were from the base, if they worked at the base, they could go there and buy food. So when my husband was working at the base, or for the base, or for the education center, or University of Maryland, then we had rights to go and buy. The base, we got gas for $10 a gallon or whatever it was, really cheap. And I did, and I went to the doctors. I had two children at the base, and there were this one of them, the doctors was Spanish, but he worked at the base, and the second one was American, whose wife had a child the day before I did. And so we became friends, and went to the dentist there as well. Any of the medical needs, I could go there for.
What struck you as interesting about life on the base compared to life off the base?
Well, there were life. I don't know much about life on the base because there were I don't think any of the married men lived on the base. I can't remember, to tell you the truth, whether they were, but I know that they had the Santa Clara area towards where San Pablo is, which was a small adjunct base to the Morón base, and it was an airport. I really don't. I knew I had friends from there, husbands and wives, and we'd go out a lot together. When in the 60s, in the 70s, not too much, but yeah.
Okay, good. Thank you for that, Barbara.
You're welcome.
As we begin to close this interview for the American Women's Club of Seville Oral History Project, I'd last like to ask you how you would sum up your experience of being a member of the American Women's Club.
I would say that it makes my life in Seville. It's made my life in Seville better. It's made it given me more friends, more opportunities to do things with other English-speaking people, book club, things done in my own native language, and it's helped me to get to know some of the Spanish women who speak English, who belong to the club, and all in all, it's nothing but pleasant for me to have been and to still be a member of the American Women's Club of Seville.
And do you think that overall you made the right decision in living your life here in Seville?
Well, that's hard to say because there are eight of us, you know, six kids, And so, you know, it would really be a question of asking them. I mean, I can say yes, you know. I might have missed some things in the U.S., but with the American Women's Club, that's helped a lot. And, you know, some kind of a relationship with the base, whether it was continued friendship with people who had been at the base and they've come back to visit, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it's been positive.
Do you visit the States a lot?
I used to go, I do go still every year in the summertime, you know, lately just for a month. But I used to go every summer I only went for the month of August because that was when we were off. I was working here. And so we had the center closed in August. So my summer in the States was in the month of August. Otherwise, I went weekends to our house in Grazalema, which was cooler. It's cooler there, and they have a pool, and it's a little town.
Right.
Yeah.
So you said the center closed in the summer. So you're talking about the Centro Norteamericano.
That's right, yes. Our business closed in the summer.
Right.
In August, right.
So if you had the option, would you return back to the States?
I do have the option if I want to. I don't have to stay here. No, because I have friends here. I have friends, Spanish and American.
Yeah.
And although my children are there, they do come once in a while. They try to come to the Feria when they can.
Yeah.
They miss that.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Barbara, is there anything else you'd like to add to this interview?
Something tomorrow that I'll tell you. I don't know. I just say that the American Women's Club is a positive experience. It's positive to be a member. And whenever I can do something for the club, I'm ready to. I'm not as able to do as many things as I used to be able to, but
okay,
when I can,
you.
I will.
And as your final question, how has it felt participating in this oral history project of Seville?
Well, it's reminded me of all the things I don't remember. And, you know, it's reminded me of, you know, some things that I do remember, but they tend not to be in chronological order because I don't remember everything at this time until I get a little bit ahead of it. And then I remember, oh, back, well, this happened, and that's why the other thing happened. That's it. So, yeah, it's curious.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much for that. Barbara Cadera, thank you so much for your interview today. We certainly do appreciate it.
Well, you're very welcome, Christy. Thank you.